Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. And I won't worry about tomorrow. I'm trusting in what you say. Today is the day. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Faith Radio Mornings here for the 15th of January. This is our show as part of the Faith Radio Network, in which we try our best to cover so many of the different headlines and topics of interest of the day. Doing so, you know, if you listen from a distinctly Christian perspective, as we fix our eyes on Jesus together, trying to walk out this crazy journey of life from beginning to end. And as we do so, we're part of such a big story of faith, playing our part to shine God's light in this world. And I'm your host for the show, Dr. Peter Kapsner, joined in studio by Rachel Sutton and Paul Perot, and they help bring so many of the guests on each morning that do just that with us that I described, and that is thinking about these things from a Christian perspective. And one of those guests that we have on regularly is Tommy Binion of the Heritage Foundation. He's a great Tuesday morning guest to join me and talk about some of the headlines out of Washington, D.C. Good morning, Tommy.
Good morning. Great to be with you.
I always love having you on the program, Tommy. And do I understand that you guys got drilled with quite a bit of snow over the last 3-4 days?
Well, you know, it's quite a bit by our standards. I don't know if it's quite a bit by your standards, but we did get we're still pretty well blanketed with, 8 or 10 inches of beautiful snow.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty solid amount. I mean, I think once you get past like 5-6 inches, it's the real deal. I don't care if you're from Minnesota, North Dakota, South Dakota, Wisconsin, and used to it. It's just that makes an impact on how you're going to do your day. Are the plows out? Are the roads clear? Where are you at with this whole deal?
Yeah, the roads seem to be clear. Now, we don't have as many plows in Washington as they do in New York and Boston, so we don't deal with it quite as well. But the roads seem to be pretty clear. You know, the snow came on Sunday, so we had all day yesterday to clean up with it. But to tell you the truth, what I took away from this snowstorm, this was really my 2.5-year-old's first big one, and just the wonderment in his eyes and the excitement the night before and the understanding of what God has created, I think was really cool to watch. It was special.
Well, it is fun to watch them romp around in the snow. It's one of those things when they first touch snow for the first time, right? They just don't really even know exactly what it is.
Yeah, when they first touch it, and then when they first romp around in it, and when they first slide off that sled going a little too fast, the whole thing is a lot of fun. But at my house, it was constant begging, can we go back outside? Can we go back outside? And so, of course, it takes a little bit to put the full snowsuit on, the 2 thick socks and the boots and the snow bibs and the whole deal. So it was a lot of fun.
No, I love it, Tommy. Well, you and I have a lot to get into this morning, including the government shutdown and some updates on the border wall situation, as well as some interesting news coming out of the Supreme Court with the illness of Ruth Bader Ginsburg. But before we get into those topics, we have a quick sign to head into break with here this morning.
Do you want to build a snowman? Come on, let's go and play. I never see you anymore. Come out the door. Like you've gone away. We used to be best buddies, and now we're not. I wish you would tell me why. Do you want to build a snowman? It doesn't have to be a snowman.
I'm just a bill. Yes, I'm only a bill. And I'm sitting here on Capitol Hill. Well, it's a long, long journey to the
Welcome
Capitol
back to our show this morning
City.
At about 9 minutes past the hour. We've already been chatting with Tommy Binion of the Heritage Foundation, who joins us regularly on Tuesday mornings to talk with me about some of the headlines coming right out of Washington, D.C. And Tommy, of course, the city has not only been shut down by snowstorms. We've had this ongoing government shutdown. From what I understand, it's the longest shutdown now in the history of our country. And it doesn't look like there's any sort of resolution to the impasse anytime soon.
No, that's absolutely right. Let's keep in mind it is a partial shutdown. So some of the major, bigger agencies, the military, for instance, HHS, those have been funded. But still, there's 9 major departments and agencies that haven't been funded. It's about 800,000 federal workers who did not get a paycheck on Friday. That's a big deal in the lives of their families, certainly. And so it is having a real impact. But you're right, there don't seem to be shoes dropping in terms of negotiations between the two parties. Of course, the president wants more funding for a crisis on the southern border. He wants a border wall to deal with a crisis on the southern border. And the Democrats have said no. Curiously, they've said no, a border wall is immoral, but they have been funding and voting for border walls all along, including 2 weeks ago when they voted for their most recent bill that had some funding for a border wall, $1.3 billion in it. So it's a curious shutdown. I'm not seeing a lot of exit ramps, they're called, or ways out. This is one of those situations where something has to give. Somebody has to blink, and neither side is showing a lot of weakness as of this hour.
You bring up an interesting point, Tommy. That's something that I've noticed over the last week. And the president has tried to get the message out a few different ways and in a few different avenues. And that's that people like former President Obama and, of course, Senator Hillary Clinton and Chuck Schumer, they all are on the record of having supported the wall in the past. And that seems like one of these things I haven't heard about why they've evolved, other than that it's purely just for political reasons right now.
Well, I think that there is a very political motivation behind the behavior of the Democrats, and that is to deny President Trump a victory. If he were to get a wall, one of his signature campaign promises, and from their perspective, heaven forbid it were to work and alleviate immigration, he would have a leg up in 2020. And so they aim to prohibit him from having that victory. Now, I think this is what frustrates us the most about politics, is that our politicians won't come together and do the important things. They're focused on the political things, and we as Americans want them to be focused on the important things. My view is that a secure border is an important thing, and I think it's important for our country, yes, for our sovereignty and our security to have a secure border. But I think more importantly, the fact that it is insecure, the fact that you can walk across it, has allowed gangs to flourish. It's causing people from Central America and Mexico to make what I think are devastating decisions to try and attempt to do this very dangerous thing, which is cross into this country. We need to secure the border now, and I think that the president is fully buckled in and unwilling to back down on that promise. We'll see what happens, but that's where we are.
Yeah, he certainly has an interesting needle that he has to try to thread in this one, is that that was his signature campaign promise. And to your point, most of the statistics, whether you're on one side of the aisle or the other, seem to indicate that the wall is an effective way to help control undocumented immigration. And then we see it around the world too, Tommy, where there's the United States is not the only country wrestling with this global migration that's been taking place the last 20 or 30 years. And so we see obviously a lot of conversation in the United Kingdom with Brexit today and a big vote there. We see Germany beginning to have a backlash towards open borders. We see some things going on in France. It's not just the United States that has to wrestle this down, but the president is in a very unique political situation, in that on the flip side, people are not getting their paychecks, and there you start losing any kind of support pretty quickly when that kind of money is involved.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right about that. Both sides feel that pressure, however, but both sides, I think, need a resolution to this. The longer it goes, it becomes less and less predictable. And the reason I say that is because we've never been this long before. And so if you're Democrat leaders, or if you're the president, you don't know how public opinion is going to turn this long into a shutdown. If they miss another paycheck in a week and a half from now, you don't know how public opinion will react. And so there is political risk the longer it goes. But I just want to be clear, it's on both sides. And even what we know about shutdowns, even what our political pundits tell us about who is to blame for them and who the public blames, that could all shift very rapidly underneath our feet. So I do think the parties ought to be looking for a resolution. They ought to be desperate to find one. They ought to put politics aside, and ultimately that will be for their political good, by the way, if they put politics aside and find a solution. I just don't see those wheels turning. I don't see those meetings happening. There was news yesterday that one of the things the president plans to do is work around Speaker Pelosi and try to find some moderate Democrats in the House, some Democrats who came from districts that Republicans represented until a week ago, and see if there's room for compromise with them. I think that's a really interesting plan. That's the kind of thing, the kind of change, the kind of a break from status quo that we need in order to see a resolution to this thing.
Yeah, it certainly is going to be interesting to follow in the days and weeks ahead. To your point, it doesn't look like there's a lot of off-ramps just now, but that can change pretty quickly given certain situations. And, of course, Tommy, other news out of Washington, D.C., we see that the health of Ruth Bader Ginsburg took an interesting turn here over the past month or so, in which she was in for some medical exams, and they found some nodules on her lungs, and they caught the cancer pretty early there. And by all accounts, she's expected to make a full recovery, and she has really been a warrior when it comes to health over all of these years, but she has been absent for the first time in the Supreme Court arguments. What are we seeing with some of the buzz coming out of Washington about this situation?
Yeah, well, so it was all of last week and all of this week that Ruth Bader Ginsburg was not going to be at oral arguments, though her spokespeople say that the surgery was successful and she's expecting a full recovery. You know, I think then there was this breaking news that the White House is preparing for replacements. I think that the truth is all presidents at all times are preparing to nominate a Supreme Court justice. It's one of the most important things they do, and they're ready at any time. Justice Scalia's death was untimely and unexpected, and so it's prudent for presidents to be preparing for that at all times. I don't think it's a reflection on the reality of Ruth Bader Ginsburg's health. I think that the doctors and her team expect her to make a full recovery, and we can all hope so. But it is also prudent that we are all aware that at any time there could be a Supreme Court nomination and confirmation process kicked off. And of course, that's one of the things that is one of the biggest deals for the party, and so for any party. And the timing of it is important. For instance, any confirmation that happens this year, I think, will be for the president to make and Republicans in the Senate to confirm. In an election year, like we saw with Justice Scalia, that may be different. That may be a confirmation that is challenged by the Democrats, or even some Republicans in the Senate say, you know what, it's an election year, and the last time it was an election year, we had to hold it over. So there's a whole lot of stuff to be watching there, but I think for now, any speculation about Ginsburg's health is just speculation, because we're getting the truth from her team, and that is that she expects a full recovery.
Yeah, I was interested to see some of the reaction of Lindsey Graham, who obviously during the Justice Kavanaugh proceedings really went to bat for the Republican side and just said the way this is going, you know, he just said so many quotes that were pretty intense in terms of what he had to say. And he said this here the other day to Chris Wallace on Fox News. He said, "I hope that Justice Ginsburg serves a long time, but if there's an opening on this court, I'm going to be hell-bent to put a conservative to replace whoever steps down for whatever reason." And Lindsey Graham still really is frustrated, I think, over the treatment of Justice Kavanaugh and how political that situation had become.
That's absolutely right. And one of the things that's interesting about Graham, and he even pointed this out in the Kavanaugh confirmation process, of course, is that he voted for Obama's nominees and was really frustrated that there were so few Democrats willing to vote for a Trump nominee simply because it was a Trump nominee. His attitude, what I'm saying is his attitude about the partisan nature of a Supreme Court confirmation, whether or not that should be partisan, has really changed in a direct response to the behavior of the Democrats. It goes to show you that the chumminess, the clubbiness in the Senate is fragile, and at some point it could really break down, and sort of already has, into really, really partisan bickering. That wasn't the case in the Senate 10 years ago. And this Supreme Court confirmation process and the way that Lindsey Graham has evolved really highlights that our politics, at least in the Senate, have changed, and they have become way more partisan. And that has a real effect, and it's going to have an effect certainly on one of the biggest things that they do, which is a Supreme Court confirmation.
That's the voice of Tommy Binion joining us from Washington, D.C., very snowy Washington, D.C., and Tommy and I are talking about some of the different headlines coming directly out of our nation's capital. And Tommy, when we come back in just a minute, want to get your perspective on a newly elected Senator Marsha Blackburn's introduction of a bill that would end federal funding to abortion providers, including Planned Parenthood, and curious if there's a future for that bill. So more to come yet with Tommy Binion of the Heritage Foundation.
The joy of the Lord is my strength. In the darkness, I'll dance in the shadow.
22 minutes past the hour here on Faith Radio Mornings, and we're chatting with Tommy Binion of the Heritage Foundation out of Washington, D.C. And Tommy, pretty interesting headlines coming out of Tennessee, where the senator of Tennessee, the newly elected senator there, Marsha Blackburn, didn't waste a lot of time introducing a pretty significant bill, one that is slated to reduce or maybe end all federal funding to abortion providers, including Planned Parenthood. Give us a sense of what's going on here.
Well, I think this is a really, really important bill. It would deny all federal funding to abortion providers, and the thought behind that is that money is fungible, right? If I give you $50 and you already had $100, well, it's not just what that $50 goes to, but it's that you can spend the $100 you already had on something else. And so it is with abortion providers. They may not spend direct federal money, and in Planned Parenthood's case, it's like $500 million a year. They may not spend federal money directly on abortion, but they can spend all of their other money on abortion those funds were freed up by the $500 million they got from the federal government. I think another purpose in Senator Blackburn introducing this bill, and I don't want to speak for her, but I know this is one of the effects of introducing and advocating and debating a bill like this. The more focus, the more debate, the more deliberation, the more discourse there is on the reality of the abortion industry in America, the gruesome reality of abortion itself, the more Americans focus on what happens every day at Planned Parenthood clinics across this country, the more that they are opposed to it, the more that they do not want to spend their money on it, the more that people understand what abortion is, the more, frankly, the more lives that are saved. And so just the act of introducing this bill is important, whether or not it goes forward and passes the Senate, passes the House. Now, the Senate has a pro-life vote about once a year, and this could be a candidate for that. Sometimes they do it around the March for Life, which is coming up in just about a week or so. Out on the National Mall, there's a vote in the United States Senate about a pro-life issue. So this could be that bill. I'm not saying that that's the case. It could be. But I'm certainly looking forward to the March for Life and looking forward to Senator Blackburn being a leader in terms of this debate.
Well, Tommy, you bring up a really interesting point in terms of referencing how important messaging is and keeping things on top of the mind. And you and I talked a little bit in the first segment about the idea of who's going to win the messaging battle around the border wall, whether it's the Democrats or Republicans, because as people lose their paychecks, they're going to start turning their attention one direction or the other. And so in that case, messaging on either side is so important. This sounds similar to me in the sense that Planned Parenthood for a very long time has tried to have the messaging be about promotion of women and women's rights and women's choice. And the flip side of this is to see what's happening with the abortion clinics and see that there is public support to start at least driving abortion out at the level that we have as a country. So it's really going to come down to who's top of the mind in these situations.
I think that's absolutely right. And this is a soapbox of mine, so I'm going to go here. There's going to be two marches in the next 2 weeks in Washington. One is going to be the Women's March, and the other is going to be the March for Life. And the media is going to cover the Women's March wall to wall. It's going to be live broadcasted on CNN, you know, every hour on the hour. They're going to talk about the Women's March. There are going to be more people at the March for Life. They're going to be from more generations. They're going to be a more diverse crowd. They're going to be more passionate. Their signs are going to say loving, uplifting things on them. And there's going to be hundreds of thousands, if not millions of them on the National Mall. And the media is going to totally ignore it. They're going to happen a week apart, and one of them is going to get attention, and Americans are going to know about it, and the other one isn't. And it's so frustrating. It is really the messaging war, as you talked about, that's paramount. That's the whole deal, exposing the reality of the debate and getting people to engage with the facts is really important to public discourse and to arriving at the right conclusion from a policy standpoint. I'm just submitting that there's going to be some unfair bias coming out of the media over those two. And the marches don't compete. They just happen to happen at the same time. One of the marches clearly supports abortion, and the other one is all about life. And one's going to get more attention than the other.
And you said that happens within the next couple of weeks. Tommy, I hadn't heard of these competing marches.
Well, so so it's the Women's March, and this will be it's like January 19th or something. That's the legacy from the Women's March that happened around the time of the president's nomination. And then there's the March for Life, which has happened every single year since Roe v. Wade. and the media never covers it, and there will be – the mall will be full with all kinds of pro-life Americans, passionate people, women speaking out about – they may regret their abortion. It is a powerful experience, the March for Life, and it'll happen. I'm not sure the exact date. It's like January 23rd or 24th. It's right around the anniversary of Roe v. Wade, but sometimes with a weekend, the date shifts a day or two. So, you know, they'll happen less than a week apart, and it's really interesting the difference in coverage they're going to receive.
Yeah, certainly that's something I want to chat with you about next Tuesday here. That's the 22nd, and, of course, on the 29th as well. We can kind of go back over both those marches and see what we see. And, Tommy, thanks just so much for joining us as you do on these Tuesday mornings. And, again, this time, I don't know if you're snowed in right now, if you can get out, but we sure appreciate getting up and taking the time to be part of the Faith Radio Morning Network like this.
You bet. I'm happy to do it. And I just want to say, as I go here, I'm a little bit tempted to change my walkout music from Schoolhouse Rock to the Frozen soundtrack. I really love that, so I'll just leave you with okay, bye.
I love it. Thanks, Tommy. Anna and Elsa is never a bad choice. We'll take a break here for Breakpoint and Bottom of the Hour News, and when we come back for the second half of this first hour of our show, I'll be joined by Dr. Rosemary Stein. We're going to go over some new and recent developments on the legalization of marijuana, as well as thinking through some of what we see in the impact of when children choose to self-harm. Of course, we continue to follow the very difficult and tragic news and Jamie Kloss, also the celebratory news that she's been found and that she is safe. And yesterday, some of the events were that a judge is setting bail at $5 million for the man accused of kidnapping the 13-year-old. He was 21-year-old Jake Patterson. He appeared in court through a video feed yesterday from the county jail, speaking only to acknowledge that his name and address were correct on the paperwork. He had no known criminal history. And it just makes me think about the need for comfort, not just for Jamie Kloss and the family, but for anybody who has walked through these kinds of very difficult situations. And so 2 Corinthians 1:3-5, praise be to the God and Father of our Lord Jesus, the Father of compassion and the God of all comfort, who comforts us in our trouble so that we can comfort those in any trouble. For just as we share abundantly in the sufferings of Christ, so also our comfort abounds through Jesus. On Faith Radio Mornings yesterday, we were joined by Dr. Jacob Schatzer, and he was talking about transhumanism and technology and the desire for human beings to enhance themselves with the upsides and downsides of that.
It's really easy for us to think that what the problem really is something biological. The problem that we really need solved is something that technology can solve, and if only we could do that, then everything would be better. I mean, you see this in the way that social media was initially popularized, right? The idea with something like Facebook is, well, what's wrong with your life? What's wrong is that you just can't connect with your friends quite as easily as you would like to. So here, we'll provide you with this platform that enables you to find all of your high school friends and connect with them and talk and that's not really the solution to the loneliness that we feel. Ultimately, we need a relationship with Christ, and we need to be built up in the body of Christ in the local church. And so I just think there are little things like that where the digital provides this glimmer of hope because it somehow ties to something that's a problem, but ultimately it fails to deliver on what we really need.
Interesting to hear his comments about the impact of transhumanism and the trajectory of transhumanism as human beings are in some ways trying to figure out how they're going to evolve into the next generations. If you want to catch all of what Dr. Schatzer had to say, just go to myfaithradio.com, search for The Morning Show, and hear his segment as well as the other guests we had on the program yesterday. Well, up next, we'll be joined by Dr. Rosemary Stein, and Rosemary and I are going to talk about the impact of marijuana and some of the troubling implications we're seeing as it's becoming more pervasive in our society.
Some of the greatest abuses in recent America have been at the hands of Supreme Court justices. This is Jim Garlow. Because Supreme Court justices have lifelong tenure, it becomes easier to disregard the intent of the words of the Constitution. I say that in light of their more recent obsession with consulting European governments and other legal documents for precedents, rather than respecting the intent of our own Constitution. There are brilliant minds on the court who do respect and revere the Constitution, but the death of Justice Antonin Scalia this year was an enormous loss to constitutional integrity. We've mistaken when we say, well, that's the law of the land. The Constitution is the law of the land. and the Supreme Court has gotten it wrong numerous times. Legalized abortion, same-sex marriage, just to name two. No human, flawed court is supreme. God is. Be well-versed on this issue at jimgarlow.com.
People like to dive right in, can you imagine that? And flap about in bathtub gin, can you imagine that? Doggies paddling 20 leagues below might seem real, but we know it's not so. To cook without...
Dr. Stein, we are nothing if not relevant here on Faith Radio Mornings. We've been working with the old Mary Poppins song with you, The Spoonful of Sugar, and we have now just updated that with Mary Poppins Returns. Have you seen the movie?
I have not. It's on my list. What I recently watched was that, what was it called? It was that movie about the author of Mary Poppins and how it came to life with Tom Hanks and Emma Thompson. It is a fabulous movie. So I watched that one before I would go and see the new Mary Poppins.
It is a fabulous movie. It's Saving Mr. Banks, I believe. Is that the name of the movie?
That's right. Oh, it just made me cry. I'm sitting there holding back my tears, and my daughter, of course, is looking at my face. Mom, are you crying?
I love it. Yeah, it was very enjoyable. The returns we saw with our five kids, and just loved every minute of it. So, well, thanks for joining us. As you do, I know that you run a clinic out on the East Coast of the United States that really does such a great job dealing with our kids, not just on physical levels, but psychological, social, spiritual, all of these different dimensions. And one of the topics you and I have talked about is the increasing acceptance of marijuana. And it seems, Dr. Stein, that as maybe people are becoming more relaxed in their attitudes towards marijuana and maybe more accepting about some of its uses, that it's quite possible we're missing out on the increasing negative effects. And I saw an article about the fact that it seems like people who are driving while high really seems to be on the increase.
Yes, because it's accepted. And so something that's accepted and is being done more frequently is bound to increase in the fact that it's happening. And so, unfortunately, there are innocent people in the way, and so a lot of our loved ones are in danger when they're out there. I have a friend who lost his son because his girlfriend was driving while high, and unfortunately, now this man does not have his son. But to make matters worse, the girlfriend, because of the brunt of the guilt, killed herself. And those are two lives that didn't need to end. And it was because of marijuana. It wasn't other drugs that they were doing. They were both high on marijuana. This does have an impact, and I don't think that we're carefully and prayerfully considering the message that we're sending to our families and to our friends.
And as it relates to that, I was talking with the first guest about how important messaging is out of Washington, D.C., and trying to win sort of the battle for the public minds. And Dr. Stein, there's been such momentum towards the legalization and towards the recreational and medicinal use of marijuana. Is there really any chance that we're going to see a momentum shift in some of this messaging anytime soon?
You know, that's a great question. And, you know, did David think that he would be Goliath? Probably not, but he was told that he needed to do it, and he just was obedient. And so as Christians, I think we just need to be obedient. Yes, it looks like the tide is going towards legalization, but as Christians and the medical society should also know that it is our responsibility to tell the truth. This is not good for our children. This is not good for our families. And there's all the medical data to support that. The bit of good that it does is nothing compared to the harm that it'll do to our society and to our children. And unless you're willing to risk your own reputation and maybe even your own businesses, I don't think that we will get that word out and people will listen to us.
Well, and Malcolm Gladwell, who's obviously a very well-known and well-respected author, he's made an impact in our country with his books over the years. In what seemed a little surprising to me, he came out and put together a pretty thorough study about the negative impacts of marijuana and is trying to at least advance the argument that we should think twice about its use and really think holistically about maybe some of the benefits that might exist from a medicinal standpoint, but really think about historically the kind of damage it's created.
Yeah, and Malcolm is a pretty liberal guy. He tends to see things from both sides, and his story about how he came to the realization that legalization of marijuana is not good is interesting in that he was talking to his wife, who I believe is a psychiatrist, and one of her patients or somebody that she knows had killed the family members, chopped them into pieces, and then set fire to the house. And he said, what would make a person do that? And she said sort of nonchalantly, because they're high. They all smoke. We all knew that. And it was like, what? Come again. Well, then he understood that there's an increase in schizophrenia, especially among young people, when they are habitually smoking. And sometimes you don't even have to habitually smoke. You can just smoke once a week, once every other week. And because those neurons are so prone to the absorption of the THC and what it does to the brain, it can release some toxins that cause your brain to sort of inflame. And that's what apparently caused for this family tragedy. But that's where Malcolm came in and said, well, I have to investigate this further, and that's where the book came from. And he'll tell you the story if you're interested in looking at that.
Yeah, it's phenomenal material that he put forth with that. And again, to your point, it was a bit surprising given that he tends to lean maybe a little bit more permissively on some of these kinds of subjects. And Dr. Stein, as you're dealing with families, and you and I have talked about this in the past, but I think it's a good reminder, how important is it that parents educate themselves on the different sides of the argument so that they can connect with their kids, and certainly more than just a one-time conversation, but in an ongoing way as kids are growing up?
Oh, it's so important. I would urge parents to go out and buy Malcolm Gladwell's book, which is Tell Your Children, and read through it. He's got a lot of data, and so you can have a conversation with your kids and say, okay, I read this book, and, you know, it's uncomfortable, but I want you guys to know before you go out to college and before you're in high school, because you will be offered drugs. It's a fact of life. My daughter's in her second year of college. She says she's frequently offered, hey, you want to get high with us? And they're nice kids. And she has to have the answer, and she has to be firm in her belief, because otherwise you're going to fall to the temptation that, you know, you want to be cool, you want to try it out, you want to see what it's like. And so I would urge parents to, you know, become informed. Even if you're doing drugs, don't let that be the reason that you don't want to tell your parents, your children. If you've done it and you do it habitually, it's time to step back and say, okay, I know that I do this and it's not happened anything to me. But what if it had 1% chance, just a 1% chance of damaging my kid's life, his brain, his potential? Is that worth it, or is it something I should give up?
And in terms of the flip side of this is, yes, educate our kids on the negative effects of this. But Dr. Stein, how important is it that our kids belong to something? Because it seems to me that the reason why we end up experimenting sometimes in the way that we do is simply to feel like we're part of something and that we belong to something.
And that's so true. And there's nothing greater. I mean, it sounds hokey, I know, but there's nothing greater to belong to than our own families. If you sit down around the table, if you look at your kids in the eye, then there's a much less chance that they're going to do something that you disapprove of. And so I think we take for granted that our kids need that, and that they need that from the people who love them the most. And you as parents, nobody's going to love your kids the way that you love them now. So sit down with them, talk to them, even when they shrug their shoulders and they do what teenagers do and they act like, you know, being around you is the worst thing on earth. Just go through that and you know, just love them anyway, just like Jesus does to us. We do that to him, so why can't we do it to our kids and love them anyway and be with them anyway and give them the right messages anyway?
No, certainly that sense of belonging can do so much for our kids and their sense of well-being. And Dr. Stein, we'll take a short break and talk more about some of those topics, but change it over to the topic of self-harm. I know the first time I heard about kids beginning to sort of harm themselves, whether it's just maybe experimenting or in some significant ways, was maybe about 15 years ago. And again, what can we do as families, and what can we do to come around our kids that are struggling in these ways? There's just so many options for you, Dr. Stein, now with the new Mary Poppins movies. Now I'm all nostalgic for the first one, so we had to go a spoonful of sugar here. I don't know which to pick for you.
I love Dewey Andrews. So the other rendition is lovely also. But I guess because I'm older, Dewey Andrews just tugs at my heart and makes me want to dance.
Yeah, pretty tough to replace the original. So the last one was very good, but Julie Andrews, I think, always will have a special place in many people's hearts. Well, you and I were talking a bit in the first segment about parenting our kids and just the challenges of that, especially as it relates to the ongoing legalization of marijuana. But one of these things that I referenced to just before the break that I began hearing about in some of our college campuses about 15 years ago were that kids were inflicting harm upon themselves. And that's very troubling on so many different levels, of course, Dr. Stein. But some recent stats have come out that it's not only then about harming themselves, but that become quite a bit more likely to maybe harm others.
Yes, absolutely. But you think about it. You're in a very emotional state, and you feel like you've been inflicted harm. And because of that, then the tendency, what these kids tell me, is that because they're so emotional at that moment, and that they feel that nobody's listening to them, that they communicate, they say how bad they're feeling by harming themselves. But they can turn on you. If you turn around and you try to get them to stop harming themselves, they will jump on you because they feel so emotionally uncontrolled that they will very easily harm you and at that moment. But also that tells you that these kids are emotionally not controllable not only at that moment, but at other times, and that they have a very pathological way of communicating that frustration. So it was not a surprise to me that these kids have more of a tendency to harm others and to perhaps even become, criminals and do things that are harmful to society. And you were talking about this happening more frequently in colleges. I see middle school and even elementary school students doing this now, and it's becoming sort of the thing to do. They'll sit around in groups and they'll take razor blades and have like little self-harm parties, and it's heartbreaking. And it's hard to talk to the kids that are doing that if you're going to be critical of them because then they shut up inside themselves. So we have to be very wise about how we approach them and very loving and very prayerful because you can truly push them over the edge and have them think that nobody's going to accept them.
Well, and one of the more troubling dynamics, it sounds to me, and is that there's this shared experience that happens when you describe just some of the horrors of the get-togethers and the parties. I know, Dr. Stein, that I made some friendships for life around the shared experience of maybe basketball or baseball and all of what you enter into, or some friendships for life around the shared experience of church and serving in the kingdom. All of these things, these shared experiences really create these bonds. And are we back to the same conversation that kids are really looking for people that will see them, that will really look for a place to belong and some place that they fit?
Yes, and so they're sharing the experience of their frustration that people don't accept them, that their home is imperfect, that things are not going well in school, that they feel so despondent. Oh, that's a horrible shared experience for these kids. And so once again, and you feel despondent yourself at looking at the kids' view. And so we must understand that our worldview is the right one and that theirs is the incorrect one, but not try to push yourself on them. And that is so difficult because when you push yourself on these kids, you actually push them away.
In terms of some steps that parents can take with their kids if they're recognizing some of these signs or some of the things that are happening, I know, again, in my classroom, I'm often with adults in their 30s, 40s, 50s, and they're parents of middle school kids or elementary school kids, teenagers as well, and they just are saying, so what are some steps? There's sort of this paralysis. Is there a sense sometimes, Dr. Stein, where you might just even have to pull them out of some of these situations to protect them?
Yes, there are, and the first thing is to take one big, big breath.
Mm.
And say, this is most likely a phase my child is going through. And then the next thing is pray, really, really pray. And then if there is an older person in your family, in your dynamics, in your environment, that the kid looks up to, that's a good person to count on and to say, okay, can you help me with this? Just pray for me, for my child, and let's look for an opportunity to open up and talk to my kid. I've had a lot of parents bring their children in, and we pray together, and the kids have never done it again. I can think of a few that now are seniors in high school. They were doing it in middle school, and now they're doing so excellently. But it takes patience, it takes time, and it takes a lot of love.
Well, we certainly appreciate your perspective and just the wisdom you bring for us as families each week. It's so many troubling times, but so much hope. I've got to believe that you also see quite a bit of hope in our young people and our next generation. We just have a couple seconds left, but at least leave us with a picture of hope in this.
Oh, thank you. I was just thinking about Jennifer, that mom came in. She was crying and very upset about the same thing, and that this girl had broken down because things were not going well and at home. And it was just heartbreaking to see how mom was hurting herself. It was like the worst car had hit her body in the way that she was crying. And we had a quiet time. I said, let's just pray about this, and let's just think about your future. I had her close her eyes and think about the future. Well, this is a young lady who's now a senior in high school. She wants to be a doctor, and she wants to go into psychiatry and help others the way that she was helped at that moment. And so I'm very proud of Jennifer and her mom and the way that they were both able to take a bad situation and turn it into something that was excellent.
That's a great story to end us with. Have a great rest of the week, Dr. Stein. Look forward to chatting again soon. Up next in hour two for Faith Radio Mornings, we'll be joined by Justin Gibney of the AND campaign. And Justin and I are going to talk about injecting some grace and forgiveness in our politics.
Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener-supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.